Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
The police chief says we need many, many more officers, or 170 of them. We can hire in the next year. We probably actually need more. But what we know we can hire next year is an additional 170 on top of what I requested already, which is 135. That's what we need.
That's D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser today talking about her battle with the D.C. Council over paying for more police officers in the 2022 fiscal year budget. And part of the mayor's answer for the wave of deadly gun violence washing over this city right now. But you only have to look as far as today's events to see that crime is of paramount concern in the city and metro area. Well, tonight we are listening to the community. We want to know what you think about dealing with crime, with violence in the D.C. metro. We're also talking to some activists. Ron Hampton is a former D.C. police officer and criminal justice consultant. Kathy Henderson is a community activist and past ANC commissioner for Ward 5. I want to make sure I hear from you tonight, our listeners. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You are welcome to tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Ron, thank you for joining the conversation. Good to talk to you again.
Thank you very much, Harold. Thank you very much.
Also, Commissioner Henderson, thank you so much for joining the program.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Before we talk about those comments from the mayor, I want to get to what happened this morning, Ron, and I want to bring you into this part of the conversation. So we have lost a Pentagon Force Protection Agency officer today. We don't know that officer's name, and the details about what happened remain very opaque. We know that officer was stabbed. It's our understanding that shots were fired. It is believed through reports that that officer was able to kill the suspect involved in that attack at the Pentagon station bus platform. But the thing that has been, you know, most concerning, and for some people it may be a bit of inside baseball for some of us, is that the press conference that was held this afternoon by the chief of the Pentagon Force Protection Agency, essentially the Pentagon Police, Chief Woodrow Cusey, he didn't give a whole lot of information. He would neither confirm nor deny whether or not that officer had died, whether or not the suspect had died, even though there were members of Congress who were expressing their condolences. There was a solemn procession of police officers from the region escorting the officer's body to the D.C. Medical Examiner's office. Why was the chief, from your experience, so reticent to talk about what he was asked?
I was concerned about that too, Harold. I think maybe it may be a result of the fact that the federal police, which the Pentagon Police are, they operate outside of what municipal police operate. And so he might have been a little reticent about talking about it. They probably are in the middle of investigating actually what happened, and before he give the name of the officer as well as the individual, the perpetrator, they probably wanted to make some notifications and then find out exactly what happened. So I would guess and think that there's going to be an additional press conference where that information will be given and he'll be available to answer questions to people, because there was more information in the paper, CNN and some of the other services, than it was released at the actual press conference.
Mm-hmm. We don't know a lot about what happened, and information, as you suggested, is still, you know, trickling out. And I think more broadly, you know, for, you know, Commissioner Henderson, we have seen over the past several days, several weeks, several months, that incidents like this have really given, you know, the residents of the region pause. Where,
yes,
you know, these things have you know, crime can happen anywhere. You know, we know that. And in full disclosure, the reason that you were even on this program is because you called in a week or so ago when we were talking about this very issue.
Yes.
And
yes,
we wanted to have a voice like yours again on this program. And so when you heard about what happened today over in near the Pentagon, what were your initial thoughts more broadly about violent crime in the city?
Well, Harold, thank you so much for addressing this issue. And also thank you to Officer Hampton for your service. Today is a really, really sad day. Today is actually National Night Out, where every citizen and police are supposed to be able to come together in community and fellowship all across the nation. And the fact that we are on this show talking about a fallen officer at the Pentagon, I mean, this is just really horrible, horrific, tragic, and it's a senseless tragedy, but it's emblematic of where we are in these days. And the situation is so horrible that violent people are attacking the police. Not only are they attacking, you know, law-abiding citizens, innocent citizens, grandfathers, I mean, grandmothers, babies. I mean, this, we're seeing people attack officers, and it's unacceptable. And this is an aftermath of that ridiculous defund the police, that steady drum roll of that defund the police rhetoric that seeks to undermine law enforcement agencies throughout our nation. The conversation should be, how do we take good police departments or fix our police departments and make them better? Certainly, every community deserves responsible, responsive, and respectful policing. And we can talk about those things as a community and work with the Justice Department to make sure that every police department embodies that. But defunding the police and denouncing the police, antagonizing them, criticizing them, all it's really doing is making our communities less safe, and it's empowering criminals. They're actually talking in the streets in my neighborhood, F you, F the police, you know, we can do what we want, we don't have to listen to you, and they're fighting the police. And when I called in, when you had Chairman Mendelson on, I spoke about one of our officers, you know, who was making an arrest. He was vigilant. He was on duty. And he saw what appeared to be and what was verified as a drug transaction. He approached the subject, gave chase. The person fought him. The person fought him. That's unacceptable. And then he had to actually, you know, recover, and he was able to make an arrest. And that person also had a gun. And I don't know all of the details about the Pentagon, but, you know, it was a Metro bus from what we can tell, a stabbing, and that valiant officer who left his family, his or her family this morning, expecting to come home, didn't make it on National Night Out. That's a tragedy. And every city leader needs to step up and make sure that we are empowering our police officers to do the job that we ask them to do. All of the police powers that police jurisdictions have, they come from us. They come from our respective legislation. So we have given them the power to serve and protect. And we don't need to undermine them. We don't need to waste our time experimenting, you know, with giving money to this group, hoping that's going to work. The crime rate is going up. The crime rate is going up. And we need practical solutions to stop that. And I've called on the council to introduce emergency legislation to really streamline the, you know, the process in D.C. to get any retired officer that wants to come back to serve for on a contract basis from 30 to 120 days We want them to keep their pensions, no issues. Help the chief get this crime rate down. We don't need the council to speculate, oh, we don't need this number of police, that number is not right. We need officers.
Well,
we
hold
need
on.
Officers.
Let me, you said a lot. And you said a lot.
I'm sorry. This is a very serious issue.
And you have 45 minutes, so we've got we've got lots to talk about. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about crime in the city, specifically violent crime, deadly gun violence in the city. We lost a law enforcement officer, a Pentagon police officer. And just to be really specific, that happened over in Arlington County, just outside the Pentagon. That is where he was attacked, but he actually died at George Washington University Hospital. And so that is still considered a D.C. homicide because he passed away within over the D.C. line. And so so that is considered a D.C. homicide. We do have some information about the suspect. Now, he is being identified, this being reported by the Associated Press, as 27-year-old Austin William Lands of Georgia. And the AP is reporting that the officer was ambushed by Lands, who ran at him, stabbed him in the neck, according to law enforcement officials. The Lands was shot and killed by that officer. They're still trying to figure out a motive. Right. And they are investigating Lands' background, including any history of mental illness or why he may want to target the Pentagon or police officers. So we do have information about that. And to your point, you know, Commissioner, one of the things you talked about defunding police, and we had this conversation on this program, you know, quite a bit, and the discussion between the mayor, and I use the term discussion gingerly, between the mayor and the city council, specifically the council chair, you know, Phil Mendelson, is that the mayor wants that $11 million to hire the additional police officers above and beyond what she has already called for. The council chair wants to cut that in half or a little more in half and spend that money on some alternative programs. It is my own personal feeling. I wish that we could dispense with the semantics, because I think the semantics often get in the way, and that even, and Ron, you can chime in on this and share with me what you think, but I think that even, you know, the most strident supporters of police officers within the rank and file would agree that police departments, small or large, need to at least evolve.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. There's a lot of things that they could be doing. You know, some of that money could be being invested in social services. We just come out of a period of time that, in terms of the COVID, the period of time that people have been home, but they've been together, they haven't been able to do things. There are some social issues that are afoot in our community, the impact of COVID on our people and the side effects of it. And I'm not making excuses for it, but if the police could solve the problem, they would have solved it a long time ago. And hiring more police officers aren't going to solve a problem that our society has put on them and expected them to solve, and that wasn't within their realm or their responsibility to do. We have gathered up all of the so-called solutions and then sent them to the police department, and yet we don't have people there who are capable and of solving these problems. And we have taken money over the years. We have taken money from other institutions and agencies in our society and provide that budget. The police department budget in this city, along with most cities in this country, is the largest budget in any city or municipality or even state. But the fact of the matter is that it has not worked out. And I just let me say this for a minute.
Sure.
We're at the stage where, to me, seemingly about around domestic violence. If I'm in an argument and I just keep getting slapped and nothing happens in, as a result of trying to solve the problem, then it's evident to me that I need to look somewhere else. One of the things that have happened in our society is that, yes, the police have been trusted with a responsibility, but they also had accountability. And there's been less accountability, there's been less oversight, there's been a less of a lot of things. And until we, there's a reason why people are having the conversation that they're having today. I've been in this work, in this position for an awful long time, probably half of my life, and I've seen the lack of accountability. I've seen the lack of responsibility when it comes to this. So we aren't at this point for no reason at all. They have to assume that there's and take some responsibility for the things that they have done. And that's all people are asking. People are not asking for them to do impossible things. We just want them to have accountability. If you or I or Ms. Henderson walk down the street and slap somebody, there's a consequence to that slap.
Yeah.
And the consequence to it is for anybody in our society who would do it. So we can't allow individuals who have a responsibility and a job in our society not to fulfill what it is that they have.
Ron, I've got to take a break. Marcella calling from Clinton, George calling from Northwest D.C., Tony calling from Bowie. Do not hang up. You'll be able to hear the program. We're going to come to you next. We're talking about crime in our D.C. metro area. Stay with us. I want to hear what you have to say. John Mons with the original Quiet Storm is next on WHUR. We'll be back on 96.3 HD2, 98.3 FM, and of course, Sirius XM channel 141 in just a bit. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking about crime, deadly gun violence, and other forms of crime in the DMV. What is your solution? Do you have any ideas about addressing it? I want to hear from members of our community tonight. We're talking to Ron Hampton. He's a former D.C. police officer. He's also a criminal justice consultant. Also, Kathy Henderson. She is a community activist and past ANC commissioner for Ward 5. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You're certainly welcome to tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Marcella, thanks for hanging on. Calling from Clinton, what's on your mind?
Yes, hi.
Hi.
One of the problems I'm saying that there's nothing for these kids to do. There's no recreation center, no after-school activity. Half of these kids can't run, they can't jump, they can't play softball. And I rode around with my bike, and I see all these basketball courts with no rim, no nothing. So we don't have anything for these kids to do. And so they on these games, and they on this TV, and they see all this stuff. But there's no after-school program. We can give all the police in the world. But eventually, the crime is, if we don't do nothing with their mind as far as giving them activities to do, this crime going to continue on. Their minds need to be challenged. And half the time, most of them can't read, so we need to figure out how to teach them how to read while they're playing sports or doing some type of activity. So there's no after-school, and their parents can't afford to pay for it. So we need some type of, use some of that COVID money to open up some of this after school program or this, I know you can't, you know, social distance, but they need to learn how to play softball. They need to learn how to jump rope. They know how to ride a bike or do cheerleading. Everything they have to do is cost so much money and the parents can't afford them. And now the activities that the coaches and stuff, they can't afford to pay out their pocket no more. So we don't, if you go around the neighborhoods from D.C. to PG and some in Virginia, you got to go way out in Virginia to find a recreation center for a kid to play or be a part of the team, where they can be a part of their team in their same neighborhood, and they making friends, and they understand their friends. They know how to understand how, when they get into an argument, they know how to handle it. But there's nothing for them to do to stay in the house, play on these video games, and then we introduce them to marijuana that's legal now. And what's in the government, you can't smoke marijuana and pass a urine test, so now they can't get a job.
Okay.
That's what we are never talking about. How can we get these kids' mind moving outside of the video game? And so that's what I have to say, that we need to focus on activities for the kids at from third grade on up. And so in middle school.
Okay. Marcella, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tony, calling from Bowie. Thanks for calling, Tony. What's on your mind?
Thanks for having me on. And I thank your guests, because they seem to have a lot of knowledge of what's really going on out there. They stole my thunder and said a lot of things that I wanted to say, and I won't repeat. But the caller before me, she talked about programs, activities, basketball courts, and so forth. In a lot of instances, violence happens on the basketball court. So I believe this is part of the culture. You can come up with all these programs that you want to come up with. Some of them are just not interested. Something that your guest did not say that I will say is irresponsible parents. It starts at home. You have some of these kids that grow up, don't have respect for the parents, don't have respect for a pastor, don't have respect for a teacher, don't have respect for their employer. So we have to start at home. Irresponsible parents, let's start with them.
So how do you break that cycle, Tony? Because as we used to say, respect is earned. It is not given. But in order for it to be earned, it must be taught. And so if it is not taught by the parents, then how do you break that cycle of lack of respect?
You have a lot of negative resources that these guys or the children grow up on. You have negativity in the on television, the movies, the music. When I was young, when I wanted to listen to something like Blowfly or something, I had to be at least 18 years old. These kids are learning violence at a very young age, and they cannot separate fantasy from reality.
So I don't know
where to begin.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a conundrum, certainly. Thank you so much.
Well, I'd like to jump in on
sure,
that.
Sure, go right ahead.
Let me just share this with you. I became a commissioner back in 1998. I moved to a community that had significant crime challenges, and people didn't like the police. I worked very closely with my neighbors to bridge that gap. We've gotten to the point where we actually, we have community events with the police. They come to our meetings, they talk to our children, they show up at our birthday parties. Matter of fact, earlier today, I left a Beat the Streets MPD program where there were lots of children and families working with, eating with, socializing, respecting the police, and it was a mutual respect. And it's a mutual relationship that has evolved over the years because I've made it my business to engage the government, to engage specific resources. No, the police can't do everything, but if the police are doing their part and they are accountable and the government agencies are doing their part, certainly we can change the paradigm in troubled communities. And my community is an example of that.
Yeah,
and
but hold on, like but hold, but Commissioner, your community has changed significantly since you moved in there in 1999. My parents live in Ward 5. And they,
yeah, thanks to my work in my area. I'm talking about in my area.
Okay, but
as a matter of fact, the work I've done is changing.
But we're talking about, I'm speaking about more broadly.
But it can be applied more broadly. We need to talk about improving policing in every community. You shouldn't just feel safe on Unicorn Lane or Foxhall Road. You should be safe wherever you are. And we need, it's a government effort. For instance, Metro doesn't even have enough police. Metro's police department is, they're like 400, they're underfunded. and the only jurisdiction. Metro gets their funding, their police gets their funding from all three jurisdictions. We need Governor Hogan and Governor Northern, you know, to step up and make sure that they have put enough money into the budget so that we can have enough policing, so that when we're telling people to support, you know, climate change by taking Metro, that they can be safe. We need to make sure that the government, every agency is working. Child Protective Services, we want to make sure that if you get a call, they're actually showing up. That'll take some of the pressure off of the police. We need to make sure that every government agency is doing their jobs. And that's one of the things I did very well. That was holding people accountable.
But
let me
ask you this, because, okay, the chief says that, and the mayor, and we're talking about just the District of Columbia, for example,
yes,
that they want the numbers back to around 4,000 police officers. Are police the answer? The chairman of the D.C. Council, Chairman Mendelson, says he does not believe, he said it in a statement released today, that he does, yesterday I should say, that he does not believe that police are the only answer. And because this is National Night Out, one of the big things that is happening tonight as it relates to police, not just in the District of Columbia, but in Maryland and Virginia, the big thing are the recruitment drives. And every police department in this region has complained about the difficulty of recruiting. And
that's
so
right.
It seems like you have a catch-22 where you need
that's
more
right.
police officers. Yeah, they're great jobs, great benefits, hard work, the whole bit. But you still need the bodies, and if recruiting is difficult, and you have, I mean, there's so many things to consider. We have seen recently, particularly people who are living east of the river, they want people from their community on the Metropolitan Police Department. But you have people who are coming in from well outside this community, West Virginia and Western Virginia and other and Pennsylvania, who are coming to police communities that they know nothing about, because anecdotally nobody wants to work on the Metropolitan Police Department in the city from this region. So how do you get to 4,000 from this the local community? How do you have that balance where you want people who respect the police? I mean, it's there's a lot to it. Go ahead, Ron. Commissioner, I was addressing you, and then please, Ron, go ahead.
Yes, very quickly. Yes, you did. You talked about a lot. There, policing is this. These are difficult times to police, and people are not. It's very difficult to be a police officer, but we have to recruit. The cadet program is an excellent program to get young people who want a career in law enforcement, who want to serve their community. And we certainly, and I support all of the residents who want people on the police department that look like the people in their neighborhood. And that's what we should have. But we also need to make sure that we have people that can pass the background checks, that can serve and protect without any issues of impropriety. And we want to make sure that we don't relax the standards, the background checks. You have to pass a background check. And being a police officer, as Mr. Hampton can tell you, is very lonely, Because in the academy, they tell you that if you have family members that may be indulging in things that are inappropriate, you can't really.
I mean,
I don't know when you serve, but that's what they're saying in the police academies today.
I was on the department
today.
From 1970 to 1994. I can tell you.
Well, they're saying something differently now, Mr. Hampton. They're telling you if you have people in your family that commit crimes, you should distance yourself. You should distance yourself.
Distance yourself from your family. If somebody commits a crime and they go to jail, then you're right.
I'm telling you, that's what they're telling people now. So unless you've had conversations with DC recruiting now, I'm going to have to disagree with you. So we're going to have to move on.
We
need to make sure that people are accountable.
Go ahead, Ron.
So when we have these individuals who identifiably on the fourth doing the same thing that you're talking about, what should we do with them?
Hold them accountable. They don't represent the general orders of the police department,
That means that we need to get rid of them. And see, when they start holding themselves accountable, when they start setting up and developing the kind of integrity and accountability and responsibility that should be held, then you can talk about, in order to set an example, you got to be an example. And
I agree with what you said about accountability.
All I'm saying is it won't be a problem for them to recruit people, but they need to go out, have a cadet program, and then they need to be visible in the community. Like, for example, I just got through seeing, the sum of detail that the chief put together. Now, I think that it's a workable program. But when I ride up and down U Street, Adams Morgan, and 14th Street, because they got all these police officers out there now, guess what they're doing?
What are they doing?
They're standing around. They're not in their car. They're not on their bicycle. They're standing around talking to themselves. You're not going to develop community relations and connect and engage people if all you talk to is yourself. Because the situation, you need to learn the people. When I was on the police department, I knew everybody in my neighborhood. I knew how many stores was in my neighborhood. I know how many fire plugs was in my neighborhood. I knew who lived. I could tell you how many citizens lived in the neighborhood that I walked in. But these police officers, they don't know that. They don't do that. Now, that may do that in Miss Henderson's neighborhood because they have a reciprocal relationship, and the community puts up their 50 or 60%. Because, I believe that the people who live in the community is 60% responsible for what's going on. Because, most of the problems don't have nothing to do with crime. And when citizens are 60% responsible and involved in their neighborhood, then the police can do what they have to do, but then they're not called on to do it in the kind of way. That's what happens on 16th Street and over there. But you can't send police to a neighborhood and then all they do is stand around and talk to themselves rather than talk to the people in the neighborhood and learn. See, the people who live in the neighborhood know what's going on. Because, the police don't live in our neighborhood. 85% of the police that we have in Washington, D.C. don't live in Washington, D.C. Now, and I understand that there are issues, and that's fine. But when you're working and walking in the neighborhood, you need to talk to the people who live in the neighborhood. You can't work in my neighborhood and don't talk to me.
We have safety walks, and we walk with our police. We talk with our police.
That's fantastic.
We cook with our police.
But
we take pictures with our police.
But Ms. Henderson, that's because you have established and done the same thing. Can you imagine if they do across the city what they're doing in your neighborhood, what would happen?
That's my point, and that's what I'm advocating for. We
do.
We need to replicate that throughout the city, and with the right work, we can do that.
So what's stopping? But what's stopping the police from doing that? Because they know that. They know that. So what's stopping them from doing it? It's the culture.
We need to make sure that our voices are heard uniformly throughout this city. When there's a meeting with the police, we need to make sure that we're there. And I'm talking about the citizens, the people that get up and vote. So anytime the chief has a meeting, there's a PSA meeting. We need to go. We need to attend. We need to interface with our officers. We need. I know the officers in my PSA, and I want everyone to know their officers. And I want the officers to know us.
I want to hear, as a police officer, when I was working in my community, walking the footbeat and doing whatever I was doing, I didn't want to hear the people who love the police. Because, see, the people who love the police agree with the police. What I wanted to hear was the people who had issues about what was going on and who was critics. Because, see, those are the people that you are challenged to win over, not the ones who love the police, because you know they love the police, period. But I'm talking about
the people who didn't start out loving the police. Did you hear what I said initially? No one liked the police when I moved over here. They didn't like the police, and they said, Ms. Henderson,
you worked on building a relationship.
We did. That's right.
That's what I'm talking about. And see,
holding people accountable.
That has to happen across the city.
That's right.
That has to happen across the city. See, in your neighborhood, there's no way, in my opinion, can you expect the police to come in and solve the problem if you're not doing it yourself. You got to be involved in that process.
Which brings me back to the host of this show, if I may.
Absolutely, Harold. Absolutely.
Let me earn my keep. And I need to bring George in because he has been patiently waiting, but I still do have a comment about that last discussion. George, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Thank you, George. Briefly, what is on your mind?
Good evening. I think a solution to the violence is to take children to church at an early age. That's my comment.
Well, right now, nobody's going to church, George, because we are still in the midst of a pandemic. And so, you know, that may be a decent idea down the road, but certainly as we move forward, no one is going, we're not doing a whole bunch of that, but I appreciate your input. Let us back to the point. My original question before that, that wonderful example of intellectual intercourse between the two of you was, and that was to Commissioner Henderson.
Yes, sir.
Are police the only answer? That was the question.
Yeah. And they're not.
They're not the only answer.
We've been
They're not the only answer, but they are the best answer.
Let's talk about answers other than that, because as I mentioned, you know, it can be argued successfully about what Chief Conte has said about, I need overtime because I don't have the staff. I don't have the bodies right now. And the mayor says, here's $11 million because I need another $170 in addition to the $135 that I've already asked for. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Valid point. But my question is now what?
It is a valid point. But yes. Let me do this. Let me say this. If they wanted to hire police officers, it was something that Ms. Henderson said when she was talking about bring experienced officers back. That's something that they could do immediately. But there's no way that you can hire 150 officers or 170 officers and they'd be on the street before the summer's over. That's not going to happen.
No.
So you have to use your imagination. And the imagination that needs to be used is the additional city services and agencies that have a responsibility to deal with the grassroots fundamental problems that exist in our city and have always existed in our city. Police don't control education. Police don't control housing. Police don't control food. But city government agencies are involved in that process. Mental health. Police don't have nothing to do with mental health because they're trained to shoot somebody that's crazy and then act crazy. That's why we need to have DBH. And they need to have teams of people on the street doing this kind of work. So, and I wanted to ask Ms. Henderson, I know you remember this. I remember Chief Bertell Jefferson. I remember Chief Ike Fullwood, I remember Chief Turner, all of them would come out and say when we had these summer exercises that that the police aren't the answer to the problem. And they would.
Well, let me just say.
Hold on. Wait a minute. Let him finish his point.
Okay.
And I've heard Conti say that. So when the police chief, the one that's in Chicago, that was in Dallas, I've heard him say that. So are we going to pay attention to the so-called expert, or are we going to continue to dismiss what they're saying? Because all they're saying is the police are not the answer. Sure, police are important, but what we need to do as a society is to invest in the government agencies that support our people and the situations that they live in every single day. And until we do that, then we're not going to stop having these upticks in crime and everything else. Because all we're talking about is homicide. Other crimes we haven't had a rise in other crimes.
Well, that's true. That's very true. I mean, if you look at the statistics, just for the District of Columbia, every crime other than carjackings and homicides have gone down.
Why did you think that's the case after COVID? Being in the house for 16 months.
Yeah, I don't know. That's fascinating to me.
But it's something that we need to be talking about and talking to social scientists.
Sure, go ahead, Commissioner.
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, let me just say this. You know, I came into office with Chief Ramsey, then Chief Lanier, and then Chief Newsham, and now Chief Conti. So a lot has changed, and I don't mean any disrespect to Mr. Hampton, you know, and, you know, the previous way of thinking. The police doing their part can make a significant difference. And we need to stop playing games. We need to, our elected officials need to be on point with making a priority to make every neighborhood a priority. Because, see, this is what we're doing. The city council took $15 million out of MPD's budget last year, which meant that 300 officers were not available to neighborhoods. So then they take the reduced numbers, and then we have certain council members that will say, well, I want this detail in my community to make sure my constituents are safe, and they're not paying attention to everyone. Everyone deserves to be safe. Everyone deserves to be safe. And no, the burden should not be on police alone, but they are our crime fighting organization. They are empowered by the citizens.
Oh, come on.
And certainly, if you want the police to do their job, we need to make sure the DPW is also picking up the trash uniformly in every community. Now,
but they're
DPW
not
workers,
do this,
they,
Ms. Henderson,
they, well, let me
Ms.
finish.
Henderson,
let me finish. They
don't
say
call
hi.
Don't call them. Don't
they
call them crime fighters because they're not fighting
they say
anybody.
Hi in Spring Valley. But we want to make sure they say hi in Kingwood Park. They say hi in Carver Terrace. So that's an opportunity. There's an opportunity for the mayor, who's responsible for every DC agency in this city, to make sure that the agencies are doing their jobs. So if people are doing their jobs and we pay, I think MC Dean still has a $5 million or plus contract to fix streetlights. So why should an officer have to look at a light that's out? MC Dean should be driving around
who?
The city.
What?
MC, they're a contractor.
Who?
They're a private contractor.
Help us out because, most of the people
they
that
fix the lights.
Okay, because most of the people who listen to this program do not work for the district government. So when you start throwing out alphabets, okay.
But,
all right,
but,
so go ahead.
MC Dean is the name of a company. They have a contract to fix our street lights.
Okay.
So that shouldn't be on the police to fix this, to say that a street light is out. They should proactively.
Okay, I guess here's my thing. And obviously, and as I said, I think that there are valid arguments for fully funding the requests for police personnel.
Absolutely.
Okay. My point.
Can we fund fully DBH? Can we fund?
As I was about to say.
Yeah. Can we fund that? Can we fund the educational system? Can we fund child and family services? Because they have a role to play too. And taking money from them to give
they
to
are,
the police
they are
who
fully
don't
funded.
Address those issues when they don't address those issues. No. They're not fully funded. Because there's no way you can fully fund what it is that they do. Like DBA is supposed to have a critical response unit. They don't
I think the politics of this discussion, is that the squeaky wheel gets the grease. And unfortunately, that squeaky wheel over the past several weeks has been deadly gun violence. And it has, raised
that has been the case every summer that we've been
That may be. And the chief said a couple of weeks ago, the reason that it has caught the attention of a lot of people because of where it happened, not just at MLK and Malcolm X Avenue.
That's right.
But also at 14th and Riggs. And in both cases, we have seen over the past month or so a great many examples of senseless loss.
That's right.
East of the river, wherever. But I would say that the police are not the only answer, as we have seen brought out by our listeners as well. I want to thank...
No, citizens. Citizens are the answer. And I want to encourage and thank every citizen that has called that tip line, 727-9099, and given information about solving the crime. So
let us hope that continues. Because we're going to need a lot. We're going to need a lot more of that, and not just in the District of Columbia, not in just the DMV, but across this country. We are still in the middle of summer. This is just the first week of August. Ron Hampton, Commissioner Kathy Henderson, thank you both so much for this, as I said, spirited conversation.
Thank you.
Good luck
to
both of you, and please stay safe.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, August 3rd. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.